Golden State Media Concepts bring you the Bible Study Podcast. Reflect and journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I feel like it has been approximately a million years since I've talked with you all. It's been almost 2 months, and for that, I do apologize. Sometimes life just gets a little crazy. Maybe you're feeling that a little bit right now with it being almost Christmas. Christmas is just a few days away, and we've been in the season of Advent, and December gets so hectic. So I hope that you can understand that sometimes life gets crazy, and accept my apology for the very long delay once again in the Bible Study Podcast. But I am excited about today's episode because it is another edition of Friends on Faith on Fridays. And this time it is a friend of mine named Angela Breidenbach. She is not a pastor, as the other interviews have been with, but I was interviewing her recently for the Book Review podcast that I also host. And Angela writes historical fiction, Christian fiction, romance books, along with some nonfiction books that are very faith-centered. And as we were talking about her book, we happened to be talking about the first book in a Montana historical fiction series, the Montana Beginnings series. And as we were talking, we were talking about how her faith affects her writing. And I realized that she would be wonderful to have on this podcast, on the Friends on Faith on Fridays episode, because of the way that she embodies her faith in her daily life and the way that she uses that faith in her writing. So she's a wonderful example of living out your vocation wherever you are. You know, you don't have to be a pastor to be called to live out your life of faith. You can live and share your faith in wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And Angela happens to do that through her writing and through her podcasting and through all sorts of other things. So it is the interview from the Book Review podcast, but it is also a really good example of the way someone is living her faith and her vocation simultaneously, and just doing her best to share her faith with others. So I hope you will enjoy this edition of Friends on Faith on Fridays. And here is my interview with Angela Breidenbach. Hi, Angela. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's so nice to talk to you.
Oh, I have so much fun talking to you. I could just like talk to you forever. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So we're going to talk about your book in a minute. But first, I would love for my listeners just to get to know you a little bit. So whatever you would like to share with us would be great.
That one's a tough one because it feels like when I'm living normal life, I'm just kind of out there all over the place. So I think if I were to tell anybody anything about myself, I'm a very, very curious person who adores research, and I love writing and sharing the knowledge that I know. So and I get that knowledge because of the research and because of this insatiable curiosity. So if you're like a curious person and you like stories that dig in for those curious little tidbits, that's me, Angela Breidenbach, and I have 6 grown children and a whole passel of grandchildren and a little feline named Muse who likes to entertain people on Facebook.
That's awesome. Your cat is internet famous. I love it. Okay, so let's talk about the first book in your Montana Beginnings series, which is called The Debutante Queen.
Yes. Oh, I love that book because it gave me a chance to learn more about the state that I came to. I've been in Montana for about 25 years now. And when I wrote The Debutante Queen, I wasn't going to write it. I had a really good friend. Her name is Valerie Comer. And she kept saying, I want to write a book with you, and I want to use your Mrs. Montana crown and all that in a book, and let's do that. And I said, no. I got told those kind of books don't sell. I don't want to do it. So she not only went ahead and sold it and then came back and told me.
Wow.
But then she wanted me to help her learn so that we did this set together originally. And it was the Debutante Queen and More Than a Tiara. And the book was called Snowflake Tiara. And it was really a fun collection. And then eventually we had so much luck with the, I don't want to say luck so much as blessings, and the fact that we worked really hard on not only getting all of the historical tidbits and all that correct in it, but also in marketing it and helping people find it. We worked hard together. She came to Montana from Canada, and we went on a tour of Helena where we set the Debutante Queen, and we learned a lot of the historical information together. And then we decided with the feedback we were getting that we needed to be able to write our own series. And hers was a contemporary set 125 years after mine. And her, and you know, I love genealogy, and I'm taking genealogical studies in college in my 50s. Gonna get a degree in my 50s. And so she, her character was my character's great, great, great granddaughter. And so that's how the whole concept started, thanks to Valerie. And then we took it into our own direction. So she could do a contemporary series and I could do a historical series. And I do tend, I lend more toward the historical, although I write a couple of contemporaries now and again. But in the Debutante Queen, I had the opportunity to learn more about how Montana became a state in 1889. And I have a habit of volunteering, because I believe very much in not only giving back to the community, but I believe that it helps us to grow internally and be stronger, more fulfilled, and more gracious people who have a sense of gratitude about them when we can volunteer. And so I ended up not realizing it, but I started to write into her a spirit of volunteerism. And the interesting thing about the Debutante Queen for me is I realized that, I think that was third or fourth book I'd written at that point. But I started to realize one of the themes that I have is a lot of my characters volunteer in things. And it doesn't matter necessarily what it is, it fits the character. But in her case, she started to volunteer because she wanted to help the children that were living on the streets in Helena, Montana in 1889. And there's orphan trains used to, there would just be children put on a different car on all these different trains that were going across the country. And what's little known history is that a lot of those trains, there's an orphan train society that says, oh, all the children were either adopted or, you know, farmed out somewhere. Well, there were actually several that slipped through the cracks, not just several, but a lot of children that ended up on the streets in the 1880s and beyond that were homeless or that were kicked out of homes that they were adopted into or that just the home didn't work out for one reason or another. But they had cleared the streets in New York of homeless children, all those cities back east. And then they started going to farms and places along the way, and then they congregated in Helena as a homeless group of children. They became newsies, where they would, you know, sell newspapers and things. Well, I decided, what if this one little girl, there was also a history of madams in that would trick these other women to come in. Oh, there'll be a maid in a hotel, or there'll be a waitress or something like this. And they'd get there having had their train fare paid or their carriage fare paid by this business, and find out that it wasn't really going to be a maid, that they were going to have to work in a brothel and do the things that they didn't really want to do and didn't sign up for. And in this case, I brought a woman across and created an orphan on the streets, and then she interacts with the newsies, but the little girl gets stolen by my main character because she wants to protect this little tiny tot that she can see is in danger. So the premise is this woman who is out just Christmas shopping finds an orphan child and she thinks the child is in danger, what would you do? So she steals someone's child right off of the street.
Yes, she does. And then there's the whole thing where she has to try to hide it from her parents and do all of these crazy things to keep it a secret. And it's sort of an open secret because everyone knows but her parents.
Yeah. And it's that was a long explanation to get there, wasn't it? I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
But it's kind of like my brain was in research mode.
Yes. So in the story in this series, this book or this series, do you have any autobiographical elements that you can think of?
Oh, absolutely. My husband and I have over the years helped or taken in several different children, and some of them would just stop by and have dinner. And we had one young man whose parents left him in their home for his last high school year, and they went their own ways. And he would find a way to stop by for dinner about 5 o'clock every night, you know, and sometimes slept on the couch. We took in an emergency exchange student who had been in a program where he was a Japanese exchange student, and he was supposed to go into a home in Bozeman, and the person running the program embezzled all the money and stranded 25 Japanese kids in Bozeman.
Oh my gosh.
And we got a call from the Christian school here locally and said, we have an emergency placement. We know you have room because we know you've had some kids graduate. We really need your help. And literally within hours, I was on the road to Bozeman picking up a child I had never heard of or seen before. And he didn't speak much English. And so we ended up taking him into our home for the school year. And we had another emergency student given to us that was going through an abusive situation and had been taken advantage of. And so we kept taking in kids. And so when it came to going back in history, laws were very different then. And women did not actually have the right to their own children until well into the 1900s. And so I took this feeling of caring for children, taking children in, what would you do? And is it the right thing, even if it's against the law? And sometimes, and I'm not saying anybody should just go against the law, but sometimes we get so stuck in our legalism that we forget the spirit of the law is about protecting people and loving people and sharing God's love with people. And in the Bible, there's a verse that talks about, when have I seen you, Lord? You know, when you fed me, when you visited me in prison, when you clothed me. And I think we forget that it's in those small actions. And so this girl wanted to protect a young little one. And at the same time, it was not only against the law for her to steal a child, the child was owned by someone, which at that time was legal, and her father was a lawyer, knowing this was illegal. You know, you just have to keep making it worse and worse and worse. But what would you do if someone were in trouble and it was against the law for you to help them? And that started to, there's been times that I have stepped out and done things that might not be considered kosher or legal, but it was the right thing to do because someone else needed help that they couldn't get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that. And I know you love research. So how much research did you do for this series? Or should I ask?
I did so much research. I sat in the Montana room in the Missoula Public Library for days. I went to Helena, took the train ride around there, which is only available in the summer and at Christmas. And it's so much fun. And we took pictures and then took tours of, they have a library there. They have the state capitol there. They had inside they have a history center there. So I went through all those things with my friend Valerie. And then you can go online and get Google Books. And I read Google Books online that were historical, I don't want to say novels. They weren't novels. They weren't even nonfiction. They were like reports. And so for this whole series, the debutante queen, 11 Pipers Piping, Taking the Plunge, The Bitterroot Bride, which I've gotten the rights back and it's going to come back out. And then one, the fifth book, which is kind of an outtake, was published by Barber in the, pardon me, the Blue Ribbon Brides collection. That one is about, all these books came out of the same research. I'd stumble across some little tidbit and it would lead me to another. And in that case, the Montana women blew the world away at the World's Fair. In they brought back 7 medals for their scientific knowledge in the flora and fauna, and it just was amazing. And how it's also in there. I was reading the reports of the women who were at meetings to pick a state flower when. And this kind of one thing led to another, and I kept going down all of these rabbit trails, but each rabbit trail led to another book, but informed the research for the first book. So I would say 1.5 years of research.
Okay, but I mean, there's several books that came out of that. So excuse me while I interrupt the interview so we can take our first break of the podcast. So that is the beginning, the introduction to Angela's book, her first book in the Montana Beginnings series. And when we come back, then she'll be talking more about that series and talking more about how her faith affects her writing and the podcast. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with the GSMC Bible Study Podcast.
Do you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do? All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The Health and Wellness Podcast, dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, Angela Breidenbach was talking about not her debut novel, but the first novel in the Montana Beginnings series, The Debutante Queen. And it's always a little funny and strange to put commercials into the already done ep interviews. So I do the interviews and then, of course, then I build them into the episode and I put in my parts, etc. And so you sometimes get these commercials in odd spots that don't seem natural for a break. So I actually cut into a comment that I was making about Angela's research, and she mentioned that she had done about 1.5 years of research for what turned into the series. It had been for the first book, but she kept finding other tidbits. And so that's where I pick up with there are several books in this series. Just wanted to give you that reminder of what we were talking about and why I'm jumping in kind of mid-topic here with the interview. So you mentioned 5. How many do you envision or would you like to see in the Montana Beginnings series?
I would, you know, originally I had planned 10, but when I found out, I did some more research. My husband and I took a trip for a weekend trip to Butte, and we stayed at the Copper King Mansion there. It fit right into this, but it may be set in Nevada because I learned some more information.
Interesting. Okay.
And so I would say offshoots of this series. So rather than I may not stay specifically in the same Montana Beginnings series, but I may do these offshoots into some other parts that are still within that first 10 years of Montana, because these fascinating things just keep coming up.
Nice. And I'm going to be snarky right now and say that for those of you who are not from Montana who are listening to this, yes, the state capital is Helena. It's not Helena. It's not Helena. Helena.
Helena. And it's funny because I think you're the first time I've ever not had to say that.
I get kind of snarky about my home state, so...
And we have so many other really unusual names, too.
Well, Butte is one of them. I mean,
Butte, yeah. And it's Butte.
Yes. Yes. Absorkey. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's spelled Absaroke.
It is. And if you're looking at a lot of these things, you just don't get it. And you know, we're in Missoula, and another one is Spokane, which national news will always say Spokane. A lot of these great names, and, you know, and no, we're not cussing when we say that our kids went to Hellgate.
Yeah. Hellgate High. Oh, it's kind of an unfortunate name, but that's okay.
It's Montana.
Yes. Talk a little bit about how your faith influences your writing.
I would say it influences everything I write, even if it's a journalistic article. I've written magazine articles and things like that, but it's my worldview. And I think that when I'm writing a character, I don't feel like that character is fully developed unless we understand who they are, what they believe, where they came from, what their goals are. And you can't really, if a person even isn't a person of faith, they have some sort of faith. And I was actually watching a TV show. I really enjoy there's a TV show now about President Kirkman. What is the name of that show? Anyway, they have a character on there who was raised Jewish, and somebody accused him of being atheist. And he said, I'm agnostic. I'm not sure if there is a God or not. And he said, well, how does your atheism inform your belief? And he said, I'm not an atheist. He said, it informs me because I question. Mm. You know, I'm an agnostic. And I'm thinking, this is, so whatever character you're writing, whether they're a person of faith or a person who's questioning faith or someone who thinks they don't believe in anything, we all believe in something. And so I think it rounds out the character to understand who they are. And I think for me, finding out that there's always a thread of volunteerism, and I often don't realize that until later. And I think it's a part of that generosity of spirit that God gives us when we want to thank Him for everything He does. And we put that into our work in the world. And that really does come out in my characters, sometimes unintentionally. Yeah. And I think I'm not afraid of talking about faith in my books either. So it's like, but it sometimes can be difficult. I don't like to do the obligatory come to Jesus moment in a book unless it fits the story.
Right. Right. It's just part of the character and not like, I don't feel like you're pushing any kind of agenda or anything. It's just.
No. It's just who the character is and what they're doing and how they look at the world. And it's like, and if I use a Bible verse, it's usually at the beginning of the book so that you understand the theme that's coming out of the book. But you will rarely see, oh, John 3:16. You know, you're not going to see a character go, John 3:16 says. No, you're not going to see it. It's just inherent in who they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because it's inherent in who you are. So that makes sense. Yeah. That's the way you talk. So why wouldn't you write that way? It just. Yeah.
Exactly. And then sometimes I have to go into explaining, because I've had characters. I wrote a book called It's in the Lasso by Marriage. And it's actually my grandparents' story. And in that story, my characters get married very quickly. And I had somebody come back to me and say, he's widowed. Nobody would do that. You know, nobody would get married that quick. Well, actually, historically, they did, because they had farms to run and stores to run and children to care for. And historically, they do these things. And yet in our modern life, we don't have the same sensibilities. And so we judge history by our modern viewpoint. So sometimes it's really interesting to find a way to help modern people understand history.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You also do some nonfiction writing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. I really am proud of a group project that we just did. And I'll have to send you over that one, Sarah. But it's called Worthy to Write. And a lot of people ask, and it's not just me, but it's all writers who are published tend to get a lot of questions about, oh, how did you do it? You know, that kind of a thing. And usually when in that conversation of how did you do it, you will find that there's a fear that comes up for these other writers. They're afraid for somebody to see their work. They, a lot of times when you go to a critique group, there's an argument about, I'm not going to change it. That's what God gave me, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, God gave you the talent. You have to hone the skill, you know? And so, but they're afraid to show their work, or they're afraid that they're going to get turned down. They're afraid for anybody to read what they've written. And they're afraid they're not good enough. And it all boils down to that they're not worthy to write. And so we talked about as a group, it's the Pencil Dancers, and it's Diana Lazier Brandmeier, Jennifer Vanderclip, Liz Tolsma, and I, and we're just really good friends. And we were talking about how people approach us like this and how we wish we could do something to help. And each one of us started talking about, well, how did you overcome your fears of the, you know, sharing your work, or your fear of somebody actually reading your work and judging it? Your fear of being rejected. How do you get over the fear of what if it doesn't sell once it's accepted and it's published and it doesn't sell and, you know, you're a failure? So we all talked about the different kinds of prayers that we did. And this is where this one specifically was written, Worthy to Write was written to overcome the fears that writers have of all of those things so that they will get out there and share the message God has given them in whatever format that is. So it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, a devotional, historical fiction, contemporary fiction, or even a thriller. It's all about finding out where that unworthiness seed is and stomping out that seed to replace it with growing the seed of talent that God's put in you and through prayer. So Worthy to Write is 30 prayers to help you overcome that fear and find out that you are worthy to write. Okay. That came out in November, and really proud of that because I just feel like it gives us a sense of worship in the talent that we've been given and confidence to go pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Where can people find that if they're interested in reading it?
That one is available on Amazon or Kindle, so you can get it in paperback or in ebook. And you can either go to Amazon or you can go through AngelaBreidenbach.com, and that's BreidenBach.com.
You've spelled that once or twice in your life, I think.
I'm grateful that Google corrects people now.
Yeah, well, you know, I before E, it's a whole thing. You're back.
Unless it's a German name.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You have a couple of podcasts. Do you want to talk about those?
Well, thank you. You're very generous. Thank you. I really enjoy doing Lit Up, which is on TogiNet. So you can find it on Apple Podcasts, and it is where we pick the brains of experts in the entertainment industry so that you can have a more lucrative career. Lit Up has a purple logo, and it is, if you want to go directly to Lit Up, you can actually even download the shows or you can listen on your computer. But if you want to go to Apple Podcasts / iTunes, so they're changing their name, it just look for Lit Up. There are a couple of different shows, you know, titles and names and things are not copywritten, by the way. And so there's Lit Up with Angela Breidenbach, and it has a purple logo and a little purple light bulb. And that one's really fun. I've had the joy of interviewing editors and agents and other authors, but it's all about teaching you in the industry how to have a more lucrative creative career. And the other fun show that is actively being recorded, but it's more sporadic, I try to do it once a month. I'd love to grow this one to more than that, but time is of the essence. But it's called Historically Speaking. It's on the Along Came a Writer network. And it is all about true historical love stories. And in the process, we share some genealogical tips so that you have the opportunity to research your own family true historical love stories. So it's a fun one. But there's not enough hours in the day. I wish I could clone me. I wish that I had at least two personal assistants besides my Fila man.
Yeah, I think the cat probably is great in some ways and not so helpful in others.
Yeah. Yesterday he decided that it was really entertaining to get on my computer keyboard, and I had my website open at the time, and I was just like, what did he delete and destroy? I all of a sudden hear behind me this, it's his paws pressing all the keys at once.
Well, you say he's your muse and he helps you. He was just doing his work.
He was trying to make sure there was a new blog post out. It just, wasn't quite legible.
How did you get into podcasting? When did that start?
Oh, man, I love radio. And to tell you the truth, I started in radio as a job when I was a single mom way back. And I sold radio as an advertising, salesperson. And I did voiceovers and I would write the commercials and things like that. And I always loved it. And then I did a radio show that was 5 minutes long here in Missoula once a week because my husband owns Design Air Heating here. And they wanted us, we started off paying for just a little spot to talk about heating and air conditioning, but it got entertaining and it grew. And so that was for about a year until that radio station changed their format, as they do, And then I got invited on a lot of different radio shows for, being interviewed, and had so much fun. And I was interviewed on Sandra Beck's, she has a show called Coach Talk Radio. And she was interviewing romance authors for summer reading. And we enjoyed our show so much that she was recording it. And she said, can you, in the break, she says, can you go for another half hour? And I was like, sure. So we did. And I didn't think anything of it. It was a fun show. I was enjoying it. And we got done. And suddenly, a couple of months later, that was like in April, and it was right before I got on a plane, so it was the most unusual. I was in visiting family in Las Vegas, and I was in a bedroom just answering questions with her, having a good time, and then I ran and caught a plane. And then I kind of listened to it back on the plane. I was like, oh, that was a really fun show. So a couple months later, she said, consider doing a co-host. We got so much feedback on the show. I need a co-host because I don't know much about this writing world that could help us do more about the writing industry. And I said, oh, sure, I would love that. And so we set it up and we did October through, I think it was December. It turned into, instead of a 10-week show, it turned into a 13-week show. And then in December, I got this message from her that said, man, we got so much feedback on that. I think we can have a regular show. Would you be willing to be the host? And so that was one thing that started. And I had another girlfriend come to me who's a great writer. Her name is Linda Kosar. She loves to do cozy mysteries, and she does sweet cozy mysteries. And she said, I want to put together this Along Came a Writer network on Blog Talk. And she said, would you do a show? You could do it once a month, once a week, whatever. Well, I was in the process of doing the deal for Lit Up when this came along, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And so I said, okay, I'll do it once a month. And I've tried to keep up with that in between book contracts and college and all that. And it's been real fun. So I think I've got maybe 6 or 8 shows out there on Historically Speaking. I'd love to grow that one if I had more time. But that's kind of how it all, one thing leads to another, and it becomes the snowball.
You need a few minions, I think.
Yeah. But the other thing I've loved about radio podcasting is that I don't have to always travel to go speak, and it gives me more time at home. And prior to this last year, I was traveling once a month, either a weekend or a week a month. And it was so much that I was getting very tired and not having a lot of time at home. And I was hearing that my own family wanted me home more, but I wanted to be home more. I was listening to my body too. And this gives me the opportunity to speak, which I can tell you just know is not my strong suit.
Nope. It's always been uncomfortable there.
Where I can have a lot of fun just speaking and teaching and helping others, but I don't have to be on the road all the time to do it. So now I've cut my in-person speaking schedule to the rare time, and then I share in podcasting and radio instead, and it gives me a lot more energy to do whatever I need to do and still do the things I love. Yeah.
Thank you for that. All right, excuse me, jumping in one more time. We have to take our second and final break of the podcast, but when we come back, I'll be concluding my interview with author Angela Breidenbach. Stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast and my conclusion to my Friends on Faith on Friday edition of the book review podcast and my interview with author Angela Breidenbach. I just thought I would try to shove all that information in there one more time, just in case you'd forgotten what you were listening to. Here's the conclusion to that interview. Back to writing. So when did you begin writing? Is it something that you've always wanted to do or always done?
It's a convoluted story, too. You always ask really good questions, Sarah. So I've always wanted to write. And my dad taught me to read and write when I was 4. And by the time I was in 6th grade, I was reading college level. And they were having a hard time keeping my attention in school, which meant I was disrupting class around me. So my 6th grade teacher had about 5 students that, out of the 6th grade, we were completely annoying. So he got a grant. I'm not really sure how he did that. Thank you to Mr. Pekeser. But he got a woman to come in and teach us how to speed read. Mm-hmm. And so I learned how to speed read. And I learned a little more about storytelling. So I won my 6th grade storytelling contest by writing and learned to speed read. So I was then devouring. And I began reading on how to write and things like that and reading more and more stories. And then while I was young, married, and had young children, for various reasons, I had to set writing aside and just didn't do anything except write a lot of letters home from Spain. And then I ended up getting to be the youth coordinator at Atonement Lutheran. And there, we had a hard time getting the kinds of programs that would fit the variety of kids that we had. So I started writing my own and reading group magazine. And so I started turning in my articles and Bible studies that I did with the kids to group magazine. And they actually bought them, which blew me away. And in 2006, they included a rather long one that I'd done on the Last Supper in a book called, it's the longest crazy name possible. It's something like the best of the best Bible studies of group magazine, and it's still available.
But it's very awkward, the
it
title.
It's a really awkward title, but it's still available on Amazon, and I'm sure other places, but it was really kind of cool. I didn't know I was in that book until 2006, until 2009.
Oh, wow.
Because you sell all rights there, yeah. So there's writers need to understand what rights mean, and so that was an interesting thing I was learning. And then I started trying to write my memoir because people kept asking me questions about it. And then it turned into Gems of Wisdom for a Treasure-Filled Life. And I was asked about some of my cooking skills and things and got hit with colitis in 2008. So I started doing cookbooks. It was like I was floating around not really knowing who I was and what I was. I was just a writer who liked to share knowledge. And from there, I started going to writers' conferences and learning how to write fiction, which I never thought I would do. And I ended up getting my first fiction. So my first nonfiction was Gems of Wisdom. And that came out, I think it was contracted on like my 45th birthday. And that came out the next year. And then A Healing Heart, which is actually contemporary, set in Montana, about a woman who has a heart attack and has to trust the one man who tried to steal her business.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And that's set in Bozeman, Montana. But that one was my first fiction romance, Christian fiction romance. And it really gave me the confidence to keep trying and going. And so it was, like I said, kind of a convoluted journey, but it was very, I think even the jobs I've had in my life, not just being the youth coordinator at church, but selling radio and selling print. I used to work for a company here in town that sold print before everybody could buy it from Vistaprint, you know, and I used to work for an airline. And then I helped my husband with working for his heating company. And all of those different jobs coming together, I think God designed to help me actually do my dream job, which is writing and speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely, you can see an evolution throughout your life as you encountered different things and incorporated them into your life. So thank you for that.
Interesting, for all my books, there's almost always a child or teen. And that, you remember when you asked earlier about, is anything, you know, autobiographical in there or whatever? And I think it's my love for children and my desire to help troubled teens. But I cannot spread myself thin enough to do that in the real world every day. But like, I volunteer for the Jade and Fred Foundation because I strongly believe that they're helping children not only survive, but flourish here in Montana. And so that's my way of being able to tuck into something bigger than myself, do my volunteerism, help children. And then I hope that I tweak the heartstrings of other people with the children in my books to maybe touch a string where they might go, oh, I'm hearing a little note here in my heart that says I need to go out and volunteer or help children or care about others. That's what I hope is happening when they read the stories. Yeah.
In your free time, which it sounds like you have about 30 seconds a day, what do you like to read in your free time? Do you have favorite genres or authors?
Yeah, I do. I love Tracy Peterson. She's got historical romance through like Bethany House. I love Francine Rivers because, and I've had the joy of meeting these women and just either being at conferences or becoming friends with them. Things, I love that. I also love reading. I love reading the Bible, and I love, right now I've got a leadership Bible because I'm the president of the Christian Authors Network. And I feel like I don't know enough about leadership, so I'm constantly trying to learn it, and where better than the Bible, right? So I have a leadership Bible that I'm studying. And I'm very eclectic in my reading. I will read ancient books that could be a couple hundred years old that you can either get in, you have to sit in the library to read, or on Google Books where you can get some of those. And I'll also get, like, I'd love to read craft books, you know, learning the craft or the marketing or the, you know, something like that. This last year I spent reading about screenwriting, and I really had to stop it. I was spreading myself way too thin. And so I did write my first screenplay. It's probably the same thing as anybody's first book. It goes under the bed and never comes out.
You never know.
But you never know. And there's timing that's really important, but so I'm reading but right now I'm really focused on college. So I'm reading my genealogy requirements, and I'm about a little over a year into, well, almost a year and a half into a 3-year program for genealogical studies. And so this particular month I'm focused on U.S. religious records. So I'm learning how to discover U.S. religious records. And of course, that takes me down more rabbit trails for more research.
I'm sure it does, yes.
You didn't want to ask that question, did you?
No, you're good.
Why don't I read horror? I don't read horror.
Okay. I can understand that. Two related questions. What do you wish that someone had told you before you started publishing, and what is your advice for aspiring authors? So those two kind of go together.
Yeah, I think I wish I had understood better. And somebody did tell me multiple times, but this is where our own brain gets in the way, that you really need to build a newsletter to reach your readers directly, and that they really do want to hear from you. I have not been as good about building my newsletter, and I need to get much better at it. It's very difficult without it, because otherwise you're giving the power of communication away to some other entity. And that may, for instance, you know, many of us love Facebook or love Pinterest or love, you know, but they can change their rules and guidelines anytime, which they've done. And suddenly I lost access to many of my friends and followers because the algorithms don't fit the plan. Had I paid attention and built my newsletter, it would be a much easier way to still interact with readers. So I'm in the process of, in 2018, will be being much more capable of being direct. And I've been doing this for a lot longer than I should have. And that newsletter should be much, much better, and should be monthly, and should be. So listen, I didn't listen to the you shoulds. For new writers, I would say your number one thing is going to be reading craft books, following people that you enjoy reading, the kind of writing that you want to do, and going to conferences. It's so many people think that conferences are too expensive, and they often are. Find local small conferences and go. The thing it's going to do is small local conferences give you more access to the editors and the agents and the feedback that you need. The big giant conferences, they're wonderful to go to once you have a better handle. And I maybe would go to those once every couple of years or something, because they're so expensive. But what people don't realize when they're starting is it's that networking in every industry is crucial. And if you're going repeatedly to small local conferences, you're going to build not just a network, but friends. And friends in the business are crucial, because those are the people you can turn to for advice, for brainstorming, for just understanding something that you don't, asking a question. It's being an author is like being somebody who has the knowledge of Swiss cheese. There's always some hole you didn't understand that you fell through. And somebody else might have the slice of bread that helps you to shore up that hole. So make sure that you go to those conferences and get involved, and join only. You can overjoin organizations. And so be cautious about how much you join, because it can get so overwhelming. But join the organizations that make sense for you at the time. For instance, I've joined some organizations that I was a member of for 10 years, and slowly I realized that organization no longer fits my needs. So I switch and I let go of that one, and I joined one that was maybe a little bit more advanced. There's nothing wrong and nothing disloyal in meeting the needs of your talent and your skills of the time. And I think the last thing I would say is, put out the work you have, work it hard, understand the craft, do the best you can do at that time, but don't hold back for fear of perfection. Just make sure that you hire an editor who can edit your books. And I've had books that have been edited 3 times by 3 different editors go out, and you're still going to get those trolls. Somebody's got a beef with Christianity, with God, somebody that you maybe realized was a scam artist and turned them in, so now they're dogging you or whatever. That's just life, you know. You can't get away from it. So don't be afraid of it. And put on the page the talent that God gave you and learn how to hone that talent into a skill little by little by little. And keep turning it in and turning it in and turning it in until somebody accepts it. It's just a numbers game.
We talked a little bit about where people can find your books. You have a website. So tell people your website again, and then also tell us where they can find you on social media.
Okay. My website is angelabreidenbach.com, AngelaBreidenbach.com. And on social media, because my name is so doggone long, I just shorten it, and it's what friends and family call me anyway. So it's Ange Breidenbach. So AngBreidenbach, Ange Breidenbach. And so you can find me on any social media at Ange Breidenbach. And I tend to be a lot on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Those are my top four. I think I've got others. Like, I'm on LinkedIn, but I just kind of send things over to LinkedIn rather than, don't do a lot of interaction there. But I'd love to figure out if I even, I don't know.
It's a lot. It's a lot to keep track of. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Well, oh my gosh, Ange, it's been wonderful, wonderful, wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your Saturday to talk to me about your books. And we will have to do it again sometime.
I really appreciate you having me. Thank you.
You're welcome. I want to once again thank my guest, Angela Breidenbach, who came on to do one podcast and ended up doing two podcasts. See how multi-talented she is? She didn't even know she was going to be doing two podcasts. So I would like to thank her for being on the other podcast, but then speaking so wonderfully about her faith and how it influences her writing and how it influences her life in general, that it inspired me to share this on the Bible Study podcast as well, so that you could have one more example of someone who is living their faith in their life. And I know that you are doing that in your own ways each and every day. So thank you for doing the work that you do. And thank you for doing God's work in this world, using your hands to do God's work. That is so important and so wonderful to share God's love with the world around you. And we talk about it a lot this time of year because of Christmas, but it is something that you can do each and every day of the year. So thank you as always for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next time. In the meantime, you can find all of our podcasts, including that book review podcast, at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can download our podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, any app that you use for your mobile devices, and you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram, and we would love to have you interact with us on social media. Thank you once again for joining me. I hope that you are having a wonderful and blessed Advent season, and I hope that you are remembering that you are a beautiful and beloved child of God.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.